Welcome, everybody. I will call the Senate Rules Committee to order. We're going to start today by having a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2597. So open a public hearing on House Bill 2597. Cherie. Very briefly, Ms. Floyd.
Madam Chair, members, House Bill 2597A renames the offense of operating a motor vehicle while using a mobile communication device and expands it to cover operating a motor vehicle while using a mobile electronic device. We have the Dash 26 amendments being offered today, which replace the measure. The Dash 27 amendments today, which replace the measure to provide exemptions for individuals using mobile devices during and within the scope of their employment and summoning aid in an emergency, and they additionally contain an emergency clause.
Okay. We have Senator Prezansky and Representative Olson, and Senator Prezansky, Representative Olson was suggesting that he give the background first, go through the bill. Okay, good.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Andy Olson, State Representative out of the Albany area. If you jump on OLS, you'll see the letter that I submitted to Senator Prezansky and his committee and judiciary earlier. I'm just going to give some highlights on this, and it kind of gets you to where you're at on it, and then Senator Prezansky is going to kind of fill in the gaps on what the bill is doing right now. First of all, this measure comes to you from the Distracted Driving Task Force that during the 2016 interim, Matt Garrett, the director of ODOT, created and organized for us to take a look at. And I need to walk through a little bit of history for you to how we got to where we're at today right now. But if you recall, back in 2007, 2872 was passed, making it a traffic violation for a minor to operate a motor vehicle while using a mobile communication device. In 2009, House Bill 2377 expanded this law to prohibit any person from operating a motor vehicle for the same offense. In 2013, Senate Bill 9 moved the offense up to a Class C violation. And in 2015, the Oregon Court of Appeals in the State versus Ramos case reviewed the legislative history and concluded that the law prohibits talking and texting on a mobile communication device, but not all activities that were being performed using such the device. So actually, I mean, if I wanted to play with my laptop, or if I wanted to play with my iPhone and Angry Birds on it, I know that's an old game and everything now today, I could do that. So that's why we got to where we're at today. We needed to do something with that, and I'm going to stop right there.
Okay, thank you. And Senator Prezansky.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Floyd Prezansky, State Senator, serving parts of Lane and Douglas counties. Thank you very much. So the Dash A27 is brought to you in a concerted effort to address multiple issues that were raised to us as we were working through this process when the bill was in the Judiciary Committee and since it has been assigned to the Rules Committee. I would call to your attention that we have used a definition for determining what driving is and also stating what driving is not. This is a very important component of the bill, so we know whether if the bill is even applicable to an individual in the context that they have to be driving, and what doesn't is not included in driving is spelled out in the bill.
Senator President, could I interrupt you for a half second? I just saw Representative Olson's text, and if you need to leave to go to your floor session, feel free.
We'll do so. Thank you.
You're excused. Well, sorry.
That's fine. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And the goal here is basically ensuring that individuals who are driving a motor vehicle, that they have the ability to keep both of their hands on the steering wheel. We acknowledge and understand that it's not a requirement. They always have both hands on the steering wheel, but that is the goal, is to ensure that they have the ability. And we do believe that handheld mobile electronic devices are a hindrance, and actually the data shows as to what the issues have been. So we go on to identify what the electronic device is. We also include but make certain that it's spelled out because of the court case that came forward as to what was required for an officer to be able to actually have probable cause or reasonable suspicion to pull someone over to actually enforce the law. The part that I think that's important is that we want to ensure that individuals know that on the Dash 27 amendments on page 2, as we've seen in some of the earlier amendments, that we do in fact call out exactly what the offense is, and it, also as to what is exempted from that, and that does, meaning what doesn't apply. And I want to put on the record what it basically says is that a activates or deactivates a mobile electronic device or a function of the device is not a violation of the law. I will go back up just to set a legislative history regarding mobile electronic devices. As it states on page 2, lines 1 and 2, it says it means an electronic device that is not permanently installed in a motor vehicle. I want to put on the record that what we mean by that is that if you have something that's factory installed, something that is aftermarket or separately installed after the vehicle is purchased, so long as it is somehow permanently bolted, mounted to the vehicle itself, that it would in fact be able to, that it would not be a considered a mobile electronic device. We also are taking consideration that individuals, because of the high dollar value of some of the equipment, that some people have actually installed what would be known as a cradle or some other type of component where you can slide in and slide out the actual device at the end of the day, so it is not left in the vehicle to be stolen or by someone while the vehicle is not being occupied. So that also would not be within the definition of mobile electronic device. The other parts of the bill goes into specific exemptions. We wanted to ensure that the different individuals that use different type of electronic devices are able to perform their functions, as such as a commercial motor vehicle driver who is required under the federal government to actually have certain type of equipment installed. Same thing with school bus drivers. And so they have outright exemptions. You will also see that we have added some additional exemptions to ensure that individuals that are working in the timber logging business, that they have the ability to use a CB, a two-way radio system, to actually communicate with each other, especially when they're on logging roads and other areas where they need to have, for safety reasons, the acknowledgement of where the various rigs are at on the road, so they're not having a any type of an accident. We have taken that into not only for the logging, safe driving, also for schools. We do understand that in some school districts, some of the buses or school activity vehicles have different means of communication, so we've built in an exemption for there. The last newest exemption is dealing with utility. Even though the definition on page 1 as to what is not driving talks about a vehicle that's necessarily parked in the middle of the road doing maintenance work, we also understand the need because many of these utility operations do use two-way radios, that they need to be able to communicate for the purposes of installing, repairing, maintaining, operating, and upgrading utility services, and that they could, in fact, be in communication with their base as they're trying to locate some of the areas of interest and concern. The last part of the bill, in the sense of setting up what is or isn't a part of the offense, is the affirmative defense areas. There are 7 areas, and if you have questions about those, I can go through those individually, but I know that your time is limited. Lastly, I would go through what our sanctions are set up. The way the sanctions are set up is that we are, since trying to educate individuals as to the hazards of individuals driving with and operating an electronic mobile device. And so the first instance would be resulting in a citation for a traffic Class B traffic violation. We've also built in an opportunity for those individuals to be able to take a course, if they choose to do so, to actually have the fine suspended on the first violation that would be their first conviction. You will see that that after the first conviction, there is, I should say, under the first conviction, if someone is involved in an accident that has been contributed to them using an electronic mobile device, it moves it from a Class B traffic violation to a Class A traffic violation. After that, we do, in fact, ramp up the sanctions for individuals who continue to drive and use electronic devices, and that is set forth in 2 other areas depending on the frequency of the violations and their convictions. There are other requirements in the bill regarding what ODOT needs to do as to putting up signage, developing the course that will be available for individuals on their first citation, on their first conviction, to be able to have the fine waived or suspended, I should say. And then we have some other dates. I think it's really important for the committee to understand the reason that we're trying to move fast on this bill. It's been come to our attention through ODOT that there are grants that we're wanting to be applying for. The bill needs to be passed out of both chambers by the end of this month, June 30th, to actually be able to qualify for the grants that they're looking for. It also has to have an effective date of October 1. In the legislation for it also to be eligible for the grants. And so those two components are, in fact, in the bill. The passage date is not, but the effective date of the bill is. And then there's some other effective dates that are in planned in the bill. So if there's other questions on those, we'll answer those.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Senator Roblin.
So I've gotten a number of emails from my ham operator friends that we use a lot on the coast when we have big storms and other kinds of things. And I just want to say they are a really important part of the safety of our communities. And they do trainings a lot of times, and some of that training involves setting it up and moving around with it. So they would not be able to do that if they were driving. They couldn't use their equipment, even if that was in a training situation on a highway. Is that correct?
That is not correct.
Oh, good.
Under on page 4 of the amendment, starting on line 2, we have a breakout for individuals that are 18 years of age or older that have a valid amateur radio operator's license, that they can operate it. It does not have a limitation, I will call to your attention, that most of the others do have that would limit that use for summoning medical or other emergency help. That is not included in that exemption.
And this is in the amendment 27?
That is in the dash 27, page 4, lines 2 and 3
and
4.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thank you. And did that provision get added in the 26th and 27th?
They were all in there.
Got it.
Yes.
Okay.
Just to tell you, the 27th, the issues that came in for the 27th is building off the 26th, where we put in some outright exemptions for the commercial schools using mobile electronic devices versus two-way radios or things that would not be really caught in the bill, logging, as well as some of the school districts on two-way radios.
Okay, thank you. Other questions? Thank you very
thank
much.
You.
Okay, we will have Troy Costellas, Kevin Campbell, and Gary Bauer.
Thank you. Do you want me to go ahead?
Sure.
Chair Burdick and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kevin Campbell. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police and the Oregon State Sheriff's Association, and on a separate issue, on behalf of the Associated Oregon Loggers, to speak in favor of the Dash 27 amendments to House Bill 2579. We've been involved in this process over the course of several months to make sure that we clarify in law and address the court case, which ended up dismissing citations because of the lack of ability to have a bright line. So we believe this bill now does that. We feel comfortable it can be enforced properly. It is a tremendously difficult issue right now, and it's a problem that we feel like needs to be addressed. We'll be working very hard with other parties on educational efforts because we think that's very important. The first goal is not that we are ticketing people, but that we are helping people understand the importance of the safety measure. And I think it's structured to give people the ability to come into compliance without hard penalties early. So with that, Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. And we hope you can support the Dash 27s.
Thank you. Thank you. Bauer.
Thank you, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. I'm Gary Bauer with Northwest Natural, also speaking, I think, for some of the other utilities who decided I'd do the short straw. So we appreciate Senator Brzezanski's efforts in this area and his willingness to work with us and put up with us as well as we kept knocking on his door. And we really appreciate his clarification of some of the language for us permanently installed. At one point, there was a discussion that meant factory installed. We install two-way radios, we install computers, we have GPS systems. Most of those are all installed after the fact. The fact that we do require the computers be removed out of the cradle at night for security purposes, because we've had trucks broken into. Again, we appreciate all that clarification that those are taken care of, and also appreciate the addition of language related to utility services. So we appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Costellas.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Troy Costellas, the Administrator of the Safety Division for the Oregon Department of Transportation. House Bill 2597-A and the amendments do bring forward something that's critically needed in the state. This is an action and activity that has essentially become an epidemic related to people being behind the wheel and not being in control of their vehicle as they're traveling down the highway. The department, through Director Matt Garrett, did bring together groups, Department of Transportation, State Police, AAA, and many others joined in the conversation last year to initiate a conversation and to give thanks to Representative Olson for bringing forward the bill, and then Senator Brzezinski on the Senate side, furthering to refine the bill. His explanations of the elements in the bill are spot on, and appreciate the willingness of everybody to bring those forward. That most of the exceptions that were in the base bill that caused some of the problems in the appellate court case have been removed, and the language that was causing the problem for law enforcement has been removed. And so we're very thankful for that. And now, the definition of driving and some of the specific activities and clarifying the difference between ham radio, CB radio, and handheld electronic are much clearer. And I think all the partners involved coming forward have found a nice landing spot related to this. The element related to the course that falls to the department and then to my division to create a course for courts to use if an offender chooses to go to a diversion course instead. We will work with the current courts and the current systems that are out there to make that eligible and available for the courts to be able to use. To close, Madam Chair, the explanation of the dates that Senator Brzezinski gave you are spot on as well related to what we trigger for the ability for federal funds that will help us with law enforcement, the communication about distracted driving, but also to stand up that course for the courts to be able to use. The grant funds would be able to go towards that. And Madam Chair, the Department of Transportation is in support of the bill and of the amendments that are proposed.
Thank you. How much funding is involved here?
Madam Chair, the most minimum would be around $130,000. Mm-hmm. The potential could be to $300,000 or $400,000 in 1 year. And the majority of that money goes towards what we do today, which is high visibility enforcement campaign in the month of April, which is we advertise that being Distracted Driving Awareness Month, and it pays for officers to be on the road to enforce the law. By having the comprehensiveness of what this bill does, we then can deal with some of the other things, which is some of the training of law enforcement, the judiciary, and for the course that's related to the courts having available for offenders' first offense.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, Frank Gruber and Mary Sell.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Why don't you go first?
Sure. Good afternoon. My name is Mary Sell. I am a lobbyist with the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. I have not had the opportunity to appear in front of you yet, but I am here today. Overall, OCDLA understands and acknowledges all of the work that's gone into the bill. We do appreciate the driving definition that Senator Brzezinski has worked so hard on. We do understand the need to broaden the definition of mobile communication device. We also find the slightly elevated sanctions appropriate. We understand the need for this type of bill for safety. We have one concern, and I'll be brief because I did submit some written materials. The one concern we have is the affirmative defense language. This bill has gone through multiple iterations, multiple versions. Some of them had the affirmative defense language, and some of them had full-on exemptions, meaning that the law doesn't apply to certain groups of people. The list has been pared down considerably, and so the exemptions that have been removed are ambulance drivers, police, ham operator, radio users, and even 18-year-olds who are possibly using a hands-free device. What this means is that these people are subject to the law when they weren't prior. They can be hailed into court to deal with their citation. The bill does give them affirmative defense, but it doesn't exclude them, so they can still come in. They'll still be hailed into court. All we want to do is point out that We don't necessarily understand the policy decisions to allow some exemptions for similarly situated people and pulling out the other people who are using like a radio similarly, that kind of thing. We think that there may be a possible cost to the essentially to the judicial system. Up front, the sanctions are only violations, and so when people deal with violations in many courts and traffic courts, they're allowed to simply write in a letter to contest. In my experience as a practitioner, most of the people who end up contesting the tickets are the people who have driving records that matter a lot for their employment, and so that does include the police, that does include ambulance drivers, and I've had consults with ambulance drivers specifically regarding traffic offenses. And so the way that we're looking at this is we understand the need for the bell. We think that it would make more sense to have the full exemption for these people that have been excluded. And that's really the only perspective that we have at this point. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Gruber.
Yes, thank you. My name is Frank Gruber, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Frank Gruber. I was admitted to the Oregon Bar in 1977. I'm here as a ham radio operator. I don't know if there's anyone else planning to testify who is, and I know Senator Roblin referenced that earlier. I had material that sounds like it's pretty well covered in some of the amendments that sound like they're on their way to passage after I discussed, after having heard Senator Przanski's testimony and outline, and having talked to Mr. Costales as well, whom I've known for many years. But I just going to run through this very quickly. I was admitted to the Oregon Bar in 1977 and before retiring in 2006 was elected to four consecutive four-year terms as the municipal court judge in Salem, dealing mostly with traffic. For many of those years, I was also on the board of the Municipal Judges Association and 1 year as its president. And as I said, the municipal court in Salem, which is full-time elected, deals overwhelmingly with traffic-related cases. Before that, I served as a deputy district attorney in Marion and Coos counties, deputy legislative counsel, and assistant attorney general in the AG's appellate division. In 1991, when I was sworn in as a judge, I also received my ham radio license, which I had been thinking about since high school. So 30 years later, my wife came up and handed me a flyer and said, "You've been wanting to do this for 30 years. Why don't you take this class and get licensed?" So I'm active in the Marion County Amateur Radio Emergency Service, the ARES unit. That's the volunteer unit serving Marion County's Emergency Management Office. And for 3 years, I was its leader, or what we call the emergency coordinator. Over 20 years of active involvement with amateur radio, I've seen had a lot of experience with mobile operation, in my cases with the municipal court, I've seen a lot of cases of distracted driving. I've seen a lot of cases of unlawful use of cell phones, usually involving some evident distraction of driving, or often involving evident distraction of driving. I don't think there's probably anyone in the room who hasn't seen somebody pull out of an intersection while like this and not noticing there was a car coming. Use of cell phones is different in its nature from how ham radios are used, and I've never seen a case where there's been, I don't know of any, Mr. Costales was not able to point me to any, cases of car crashes that were caused by ham radio operators on their microphones. You just don't, your mind doesn't get sucked into the radio when you're like this, occasionally chatting, you know, making a comment into the microphone, then waiting for the response, because it's not a duplex system like a cell phone is. You can't interrupt one another, and there are some other factors in how it's used and so on that makes it less distracting. So, I would not be here supporting as I am. The reinstatement into this bill of an exemption for ham radio operation if I thought that it was going to be present a traffic hazard. When there's some evidence that it does present a traffic hazard, I think that should be dealt with, but I don't think there is at this time. And as Senator Roblin pointed out, ham operators need to be able to train, need to be able to use their ham radio mobile rigs in their cars. If there's no longer the ability to use it as in ordinary day-to-day use, who's going to shell out $250 to $700 to put a radio into their car that they can only use when there's an earthquake or other disaster? Some of our members are, most of us are not wealthy, and we can't afford to have a piece of equipment sitting there for that we can't use. So people would not be putting them in their vehicles to use. The hams wouldn't. The repeater systems would lose support and would become less common. The repeater systems are what allow our signals to be retransmitted to cover a longer distance, and are extremely important in emergency response situations, emergency communication situations. Some other things I have here. I'm not going to take up your time. I know from 7 years at the council's office that there's no sense plowing ground that's plowed, but I do want to accept any questions you might have that I might be able to answer. As I say, I think I may be the only ham radio operator here today. John Kaur, who's the American Radio Relay League section manager for Oregon, has been carrying the water for this in prior hearings, but he's unable to be here today, and he asked me to come in his stead and express his regrets for not being able to be here. So if there are no questions, I would urge that whichever the amendments you adopt, that it be one that reinstates the exemption for ham radio operators. I think a flat exemption rather than an affirmative defense would be better, but it sounds like the issue is pretty well covered in the amendments that are presented. So if there are any other questions?
Thank you. I think it's really unique that we get the perspective of a ham radio operator who is also a judge who handled some of these traffic problems. Right. So it's
I appreciate
a very,
that.
Very broad-based perspective. Mm-hmm. Senator Roblin.
Yeah, so are you going to be involved in the field day event Saturday, June 24th?
I plan, I would invite everyone to find out where your local hams are doing their field day events. The Salem Amateur Radio Club usually has an excellent one.
Cool.
I'm not sure where they are. The Marion County Amateur Radio Emergency Service Unit has a field day also going on. I thought I saw that it was Detroit Ranger Station, but I'm not positive. Usually they do it out at the Public Works office out on Silverton Road. I plan to take myself and maybe one other person and go out in the mountains above Detroit somewhere and set up a portable station up there and see what we can do from there. But yes, it's a big event. Also, for points, for those units, those clubs that are collecting points, by the way, there are extra points if you have an elected official stop by and visit the ham radio field day station. So I invite you all to do that.
Okay.
Yes.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Other questions from the committee? Senator Farioli, Mr. Gruber is both a traffic judge and a ham radio operator.
Retired traffic judge.
Retired yeah, traffic right. judge. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay,
thank you.
I will close the the public hearing because I don't have any more witnesses on House Bill 2597. And stand at ease for just a second. Senate Bill 1013. Cherie.
Madam Chair and members, Senate Bill 1013 directs the Secretary of State to conduct a study and develop recommendations regarding methods for using tax information filed with the Department of Revenue to ensure the accuracy of voter addresses included in the centralized voter registration system. We have two amendments being offered. The -4 amendment require the Secretary to work with the Director of Veterans Affairs to conduct the study, and the -5 amendments require the Secretary to work with the Higher Education Coordinating Commission as well as the Department of Veterans Affairs to conduct the study.
Okay. Okay. We have Senator Dimbrough and Steve Elzinga. So, Senator Dimbrough, why don't you start?
Thanks, Madam Chair. Colleagues, I'm Michael Dimbrough. I represent Senate District 23. That's Northeast Portland and Southeast Portland and the city of Maywood Park. I'm very pleased to speak to you about Senate Bill 1013, which is a bill that came out of my office looking at our continuing to work on our, you know, very promising new automatic voter registration system, which, as you know, is connected to our DMV, and people become registered when they interact with the DMV, which is great because it's easy. It seems to be working. But, of course, people don't necessarily interact with the DMV every day. And so I think we need to be looking at perhaps are there some other ways that we can help people to interact with this system and expand this good effort and get more people voting. Towards that end, we had this bill drafted with looking at using as the vehicle for expanding the number of contacts our Department of Revenue, with the assumption that people are interacting with DOR every year at least, and this would make sense. For reasons I'm not entirely sure, and Stephen, I think, can probably speak to more effectively, there are some technical issues with that connection with DOR in terms of doing file sharing. And so we were looking at what might be a good, effective first step to get people into the system who perhaps are not currently voting in the numbers that we would like. And so we, towards that end, I offer you the -5 amendments. There are also -4 amendments that look just at the Department of Veterans Affairs and interactions with that department. And that's great. You know, we certainly want more participation among our veterans. But the other group that makes sense for us to look at the same time are our college and university students, who are also a very mobile kind of population. And looking at both of those populations at the same time, I think would be very effective. Veterans balanced with college students, it seems to make sense for a number of reasons. So that's what the -5s do. And let me just clarify that what we're looking at, and I think Steve from the Secretary of State's office can speak more to this, is we're looking at studying that this would not make those connections, put those connections into effect, but would initiate a study that would be done by the Secretary of State's office to look at what are the pluses and challenges, what are the benefits and challenges of doing this kind of file matching. So with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions about it after you hear from the perspective of the Secretary of State's office. And I just want to say I really appreciate the good efforts and good intentions of the Secretary of State in this area. He has said publicly that his goal is to expand the franchise and get more people voting, and I think he is putting his money where his mouth is here. Appreciate that.
Thank you. Can I just ask you quickly which amendment you're supporting?
I support the 5 because it's the more balanced amendment.
Okay. Mr. Elzinga.
Good afternoon, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. My name is Steve Elzinga. I'm the Governmental and Legal Affairs Director for the Secretary of State. I thank Senator Dimbrough for working on this bill with us, as well as the bus project. The Secretary of State is committed to encouraging voter participation and maximizing access while ensuring election integrity, and he believes that every Oregonian who is eligible to vote should be able to vote. This April, Secretary Richardson launched a major expansion of voter access through a new administrative rule that protects the rights of an estimated 60,000 Oregonians to receive ballots, including Oregonians serving our country on military deployments, college students who are out of state, and voters frustrated with the political system. This was the first major expansion of voter access that received bipartisan support in many years. Secretary Richardson is working with the bus project to find further ways to continue expanding voter access that have broad bipartisan support in the legislature. We want to use available technology to improve accuracy and efficiency in the elections process. We believe that helping our veterans through the Dash 4 amendment to SB 1013 is the next logical step. This is Oregon's way to acknowledge the sacrifices our veterans have made. By expanding opportunities for our veterans to vote, we make it easier for them to participate in the democratic process they defended. The Dash 4 amendment would launch a study of expanding automatic voter registration and updating voter addresses through interactions with the Department of Veterans Affairs and their veteran service officers around the state. The Elections Division would staff the study and do most of the technical work. We would solicit input throughout the process from the Department of Veterans Affairs, the bus project, veterans groups, legislators, and other interested Oregonians. We would submit a report to the legislature on our findings and recommendations by November legislative days of this year, which would allow any needed authorizing legislation to be considered during the 2018 session. And so we urge the committee's support for the Dash 4 amendment.
Okay, thank you. I'm a little confused on the Dash 4 versus the Dash 5. Does the Dash 5 include the content of the Dash 4?
It does. It's the Dash 4 enhanced.
So improved, I would say. So the Dash 4 includes the veterans.
It includes the veterans and the college and university students.
The Dash 5 does.
The Dash 5, yes.
Okay, so it's a question of whether you limit to veterans or whether you also include college and university students. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Other questions from the committee? Thank you very much. We don't have anybody else signed up, so we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1013 and open a work session on House Bill 2597. And I would ask our Senate President, no, actually, I'm going to ask our member over here, Senator Roblin, for a motion on House Bill 2597.
Do we have an amendment?
Yes.
We
have the Dash 27 amendments.
We don't have paperwork.
What?
Never mind.
Please suspend for paperwork.
Is there a motion on the table, Madam Chair?
No, there's no motion yet. We use suspend for paperwork. Okay. I asked for. I move for a suspension of the rules to adopt. Okay. Okay, just a second. Oh, I see. We do suspend the rules for the bill. Okay. Okay. Senator Roblin, you can just move the Dash 27 amendments.
Madam Chair, I wish to move the Dash 27 amendments to House Bill. 2597A. Do I need to say the date of the amendments?
No. Senator Roblin has moved the Dash 27 amendments to House Bill 2597. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So ordered. Now, Senator Roblin moves that the rules be suspended for the purpose.
That's after Senator Roland moves.
I thought I could get away with it.
I move that the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking final action on House Bill 2597A without the fiscal or revenue impact statements.
Senator Roland has moved that the rules be suspended for taking final action on House Bill 2597 without the fiscal and or revenue impact statement. Is there any discussion? No objections? So ordered. Okay.
Chair, I move.
Regular motion.
House Bill 2597 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and add a subsequent referral. I'm not going to add that. To the floor with a due pass recommendation. Yeah. Oh, round one.
Yes, this is the final 2 weeks of session. Senator Roblin has moved House Bill 2597 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator Ferrioli, I think you should explain yourself.
No, Madam Chair, I refuse to explain myself. And Madam Chair, this bill, if I'm not on the wrong one, it has some carve-outs for ham operators.
Yep.
Correct.
My son is a ham operator, so I'll take this opportunity before voting to announce a potential conflict of interest.
So noted. That will be entered on the record. Is there any other discussion? Senator Roblin.
I just want to say that the last group of amendments, which I obviously had not read well enough, did have the ham exclusion, which was really important to me, and I think it did a very nice job of clarifying who can use mobile devices that are installed or at factory or otherwise in places like logging and in utilities. So I'm very pleased with the last amendments and look forward to supporting this
bill. Thank you. And Senator Roblin, for someone who drives as much as you do, I think you almost have to.
They didn't ever say anything about watching movies.
No. That was another bill.
Oh.
Senator Courtney.
So carve out means that ham operators are not in the bill.
In emergency circumstances, ham operators can operate.
Oh, actually, not even in emergencies.
They broadened it.
They broadened it. Yes. They're gone.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Your child is home free.
That's not the point of my comment.
No, I'm just trying to get you to come my way.
Yeah, I'm coming your way.
It's coming after you.
There's a hand up in the audience.
I'm sorry, I just wanted to clarify.
No, that's fine. Okay? We're just...
Okay. Do you want me to clarify just what she's going to say?
Yes.
They can use it as an affirmative defense.
That's right. I'm sorry, just trying to help.
Okay, appreciate it. Thank you.
Madam Chair, facts are not what we need at this point.
We have a motion on the floor to send House Bill 2597 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Would you please take the roll?
Senator Beyer.
Excused.
Senator Boquist.
Also excused.
Senator Roland.
Aye.
Senator Ferrioli.
No.
No, Senator Courtney.
No, you're an aye.
Senator Courtney.
Yeah. Oh, you were correcting. You weren't voting.
No. Senator Courtney needs to vote. We need to ask for Senator Courtney's vote.
And Senator Courtney.
Yes.
And now it's your turn.
Chair votes aye. So that was special. Okay.
Major.
House Bill 2597 has been recommended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. The work session is closed. Phew.
Carrier?
Have a carrier, yeah.
We will have Senator Pazansky carry.
Oh, you don't want Senator Courtney to carry?
Are you sure you want to go?
Okay, now we will open a... So we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 908 for the purpose of sending it to the Ways and Means Committee. And we have a dash 2 amendment for Senate Bill 908. I think we can just do it, right? Okay.
Madam Chair, are we in work session?
Yes.
I move that we adopt the dash 82 amendments to Senate Bill 908.
Senator Farioli has moved the dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 908, and we have paperwork on those. Is there any discussion, any objection?
The only question I have is, it's posted as a work session, possible, no, as a public hearing and possible work session. We didn't have a public hearing. Is that a problem, or are we okay?
I think we're okay. Do we have to have a hearing? Okay, we will close the work session on Senate Bill 908. I'm getting more sleep. And open a very brief public hearing on Senate Bill 908.
Madam Chair and members, Senate Bill 908 establishes the Oregon Energy Commission as the policy and rulemaking body for the Oregon Department of Energy and modifies and transfers certain duties of the department to the commission. Lastly, the measure declares an emergency and becomes effective on passage. We have the fiscal and revenue lights associated with the dash 2 amendments, which add four non-voting members to the commission and require the Department of Energy to include information on the impact of state agency activity in achieving greenhouse gas emission goals.
Okay.
There's one person.
Irene Gilbert. Welcome. You better be good.
Madam, I will be. Madam Chair, members of the committee. I was up here for another bill and noticed that this was happening, and it's probably the thing that I'm most concerned about as far as bills that are going before this legislature. And the
Can you put your name on the record, please?
Oh, Irene Gilbert, 2310 Adams Avenue, LeGrand, Oregon. And the issues that I wanted to bring before this committee is neither one of these bills appears to move the contested case process out of the Department of Energy and into some informal or non-biased, if we will, group. Right now, the Department of Energy writes the rules, interprets the rules, cites the developments, hires the hearings officers, decides if anyone gets a contested case, and determines the final decision from those cases. So I can give you some examples of what this has created. It has created some decisions regarding no significant impact, such as the fact that it's okay to have 108 decibels of noise at protected areas. That's more than a jet engine taking off. They have decided that its viewscapes are not significantly impacted when you have 500-foot turbines within 1 mile of the wild and scenic Deschutes that can be seen from the river bottom. They have decided that the area of development of a wind farm, which used to be the entire area that included all the supplemental developments like transmission lines, roads, buildings, was what constituted the facility. They've now decided that only the siting corridors are what constitutes the development. And with the Wheat Ridge decision they just made, they decided that the intent of the statutes was that developers got to decide what was included as part of the development. So with Wheat Ridge, they chose to leave out the transmission line that connects the Wheat Ridge wind farm to the grid. So,
Matt, could I interrupt you for a minute?
Uh-huh.
We don't have a lot of time here,
okay.
We need you to wrap
I guess
it
what
up.
I'm saying here is that there are a lot of abuses of this. They have never allowed a contested case on an amended site certificate. There are some very strange interpretations, and there is no recourse for the public or anyone who disagrees with any of their opinions other than going to the Oregon Supreme Court, which is highly costly. There would be no cost to any agency that takes this over because the developers pay for the cost of contested cases. So I encourage you to move that function out of the Department of Energy.
Okay, thank you. And
Madam Chair, under discussion?
Senator Farioli.
Madam Chair, I'd like to invite the witness to make sure that the testimony that she's made is posted to OLIS and forwarded to our offices. The action that I believe the committee will take will move these bills, but they will still be amendable after they've moved. So if you please provide that information. I'm very interested in learning what amendment would be necessary to create that additional venue for appeal. The Department of Energy is the department in Oregon which has garnered the largest, most intense scrutiny of the session, so it may be timely.
Well justified.
Thank you, ma'am.
And thank you. I didn't mean to cut you off. Okay. There's nobody else signed up, so I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 908 and open a work session on Senate Bill 908. Senator Farrelly, we have a dash two amendment.
Madam Chair, I would move that we adopt the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 908, which I thought we already did, but I guess we didn't.
No, we didn't because
we were not.
Stopped.
Okay.
Because Senator Roblin caught us. Senator Farrelly has moved the dash two amendment to Senate Bill 908. Is there any discussion?
Yeah, Madam Chair, just to remind those that are attempting to follow the actions of this committee, that added four non-voting members to the commission. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Are there any objections to the amendment? So ordered. Senator Farrelly.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 908 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Farrelly has moved Senate Bill 908 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any discussion? Objection? So ordered. Okay, now we will open a public hearing.
Good job.
On Senate Bill 952. And I do not believe we have anybody signed up, so we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 952 and open a work session on Senate Bill 952. And Cherie, we have an amendment. We just got the paperwork.
Yes, we have the dash A2 amendments, which increase the annual assessment exemption to less than $2,500. Currently, it's $250. And they direct the department to include a review of opportunities for public involvement in the siting council proceedings. We have the fiscal and revenue paperwork light for the purposes of sending this measure to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
All right, Senator Farrelly, we have a dash two amendment.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the dash A2 amendments to Senate Bill 952, dated 6/22/17.
Senator Farrelly has moved the dash A2 amendment to 952. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Farrelly.
Madam Chair, I move the Senate Bill 952A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill subsequently be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Farrelly has moved Senate Bill 952 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Discussion?
I just want to say thanks to send it to the committee I have to work on again, and I will look forward to getting input from people if there's other things that need to be changed, because I agree with what was spoken earlier from Senator Farrelly that this is a department that needs to have a lot of work done. And these bills are there to try to correct some of those issues, and I look forward to hearing from people and seeing what we need to do in the Ways and Means practice.
And speaking for the Committee on Rules, we wish you the best of luck. Is there any other discussion? Objections? So ordered. Well, committee, we got through this one, so we're on 1 hour notice. I want everybody to be aware that things can happen very quickly in the last 2 weeks of session. So keep your eye out on the agendas, and we are adjourned.
If you put it in the one place, the if you put it in the one place.